start using cutting-edge Warp Speed 5G technology with your cell phone. Let me tell you about my friends at mobilemobile.io. They have an ultra-fast 4G LTE and 5G network that covers 99% of Americans. So they've got you covered everywhere. Think about it for a moment. You have the opportunity to take a test drive for 10 days with unlimited talk, text, and premium data. What is premium data? Premium data is an allotment of a cellular data that you receive from a higher priority on the network. You won't get throttled like you will with some of those, well,
non-brand
service providers. To find out more information, all you have to do is go to mobilemobile.io. That's mobilemobile.io to start your 10-day free trial. Well, hello and welcome to Safety FM. This is Jay Allen. My first question for you today, have you heard about the Safety Man movement? If you haven't, let's learn more here today on Safety FM.
Broadcasting live from the Safety FM studios in Orlando, Florida, here is your host, Dr. Jay Allen on Safety FM.
This episode of the broadcast and the podcast is brought to you by Safety Focus Moment. They're consultants that want to help you get the safety culture you've been looking for. For more information, go to safetyfocusmoment.com.
Well, hello and welcome to Safety FM. Hopefully you're off to a fantastic week already. I know today is already Tuesday, so hopefully everything is going quite fantastic for you. Before we get into our conversation with Terry D. Gray today, let's cover some information real quick. Have you taken the opportunity to come out to safetyfm.com? Come out there, take a listen to what we have to offer. There are several shows streaming on our web broadcast, and we have up to two radio stations at the moment. If you get the chance, come out there, take a listen to Todd Conklin's Pre-Accident Investigation, The Accidental Safety Pro with Jill James, Crucial Talks with Mike Saddam, the Safety Consultant Podcast with Sheldon Primus, and then we have a show that runs Monday through Friday at noon, and that is the Rated R Safety Show. And of course, always the flagship show that you get to listen to on Tuesdays with the long version that we do, you and I here, or on Fridays you get to listen to the mini version. So come out there, take a listen to what we have to offer. Of course, we're always streaming 24/7 at safetyfm.com and at safetyfm.live. So today I have the great opportunity to speak with Terry D. Gray. Now, Terry's going to talk about his Safety Man movement, and I think that it's going to be very exciting for you to take a listen to this. So Terry D. Gray works as a pipe fitter for the sole provider of aircraft carriers for the U.S. Navy and the largest industrial employer in Virginia. Terry has been a pipe fitter for 14 years, with several of those years holding multiple leadership roles for safety, nonprofit, churches, and industrial companies. Terry has become a powerful voice in the safety community with his Safety Man movement efforts. Working hands on the industrial field, he passionately believes in ownership and sharing the burden when it comes to safety. As a result of his efforts and passion, Terry has been recognized and honored with several awards, his efforts to change the culture of safety worldwide. Please welcome to our show, Terry D. Gray.
You are listening to a renowned safety expert, Dr. Jay Allen, on Safety FM.
Changing safety cultures, one broadcast and one podcast at a time. Join the fun on social media and find us on Facebook at Safety FM.
So let me just ask the question, because I always like to start off with this. How did you get involved with this whole thing? How did the whole safety thing start with you?
Well, it's funny, actually. When the very first time I got involved with doing anything that was safety was at my job, where we have a VPP site, and part of that, there has to be a safety team established among the craftsmen. And so we have what we call safety task teams where I work. And a friend of mine was talking to me, and you know, I was just, I'm a pipe fitter, so I was just new to the job site, and I was just trying to be as active and involved as I could. And a friend of me of mine said, hey, man, you should join the task team. And when I heard that, I was like, yeah, that'd be a good resume builder. And I just want to do something and can go to some meetings. So initially, I just started dealing in safety just as a thing to do to add to, hey, this is what I've done, because I had the idea of being a foreman at the time, and I wanted to make sure that I was able to display my ability to lead or my willingness to participate and be engaged. So that's kind of where it all started, was just at a simple invite to, hey, you want to be a part of the task team. And that was back.
So funny how things change in that particular regard, right? Because all of a sudden you're going from pipe fitting to all of a sudden someone's asking you to do this. And how does this whole process go? Because now you're known as part of the safety man movement. So how does this whole thing start? So you start going into this meeting as you're going to try to build in your resume, and what happens next?
So when I get to the meeting, I didn't really know what was going on. I didn't know what the expectations was of me. It was a little rough, but I was willing to give my input. And so at that point, when they saw that I was interested, or at least showing interest, at one point they had rotated the leader to another person, and that leader asked me to be a co-leader. So I was a co-leader with them. And then at one point, our supervision came to me and said, hey, we want you to be the lead. I was like, okay. And so I started being the leader of the task team back in 2013. I was leading it. And the whole safety man movement thing started, was really crazy. I was at work one day, and people knew I was on the task team, and they knew I was the leader. And so this one guy calls me over and says, hey, Mr. Gray, come here, man, I gotta show you something. And so I go over to him, and he shows me this metal tag. It's like about the size of a business card, but it's a metal tag, and it's on a metal floor, and metal is very slippery. So he looks at this small metal card size tag and says, hey, man, look, somebody can slip on this card. And I was like, yeah, why you didn't pick it up? He said, man, I would, but that ain't my job. I was like, wow. He was messing with me at the time, but what I understood is that people really think like that. And I was like, man, I need to change the way that these people think, because I was tired of just being called a safety man. I was like, why do they keep calling me the safety man, as if safety isn't all of our responsibility? And so I made up in my mind, I was like, all right, so I'm going to just change the way that these people perceive safety and make it so obvious that we all are the safety men and women that they can no longer call me that. Like, you won't go in the police station and you'll see a police officer be like, hey, policeman. No, everybody already knows that we are a part of this thing. So no one called you policeman, or, you know, maybe out of respect, hey, lieutenant, this, that, and the other. But you don't say, hey, police lieutenant, you know, but they already knew that they are that. Or teachers already know that we are all teachers, so they don't say, hey, teacher Gray, how you doing? And so that same concept was like, hey, I don't want you to say, hey, safety man. We are all safety men and women. So the movement started to try to change people's perspective, to see that the safety man is no longer one individual, but many individuals that are one, which is my main line that I try to share with people.
And as you're trying to incorporate that, and you start having these discussions with people, all of a sudden that it's not just safety as a particular person or individual, but it becomes more along the lines of, hey, it's everyone who's involved inside of the organization. How does the mindset start to change? Because you're talking about going from one standpoint to another, and that's not an overnight thing, even though a lot of people, when they probably look back at you and go, oh yeah, he did it overnight. It's not an overnight occurrence. How did you get it to change?
So it was a process. It is still in process. It isn't necessarily that it is all changed or all fixed and all better right now, but it is the commitment to hanging in there, to make intentional efforts to change the way that people think. So people don't, I mean, it's, when I started, when I was trying to, I had to think for myself, what would make me change the way that I perceive something? And the first thing that I thought about is that I have to actually care about it. So I had in my mind, I was like, okay, so I already do teaching on a, I have a teaching type of mindset from my ministry experience. And so I was like, okay, so if I wanted to share this information, I have to be able to teach it. So I have to create a format that I can share the information, but the information has to be something that actually means something. And so I was like, if I was wanting to change my mind about something and to do it willingly, I had to actually care about it. And so I was like, all right, so I want to make sure that I'm telling people to care for people. You have to care. You have to see that you have a foot in the game. You have a role to play. And I wanted to be able to convey that information to people. And so the very first time we tried to talk about it, I was brainstorming, and I was sharing with a friend of mine about, I was like, all right, so I want people to care. And it started with the word empathizing, which was caring, which is knowing, understanding what people go through without compromising what they need to do. So I understand that, hey, it may be hot outside, or it may be this, that, and the other, but there are still rules and things in place that we need to follow. I can relate to what you're saying, but we still have to do it right for safety purposes, type of thing. So really it has been communicating, trying to change the way that people think about it first, and showing them that I'm willing to do something first before any type of expectation is in return. It's really a relationship building type of process, where if you wanted someone to care for you, if you wanted someone to buy into what you were trying to sell them, if you're trying to get a girlfriend or get somebody like that, you have to be willing to invest something or put yourself on the line to display to that person that I really mean what I say. And so I was at least willing to try to share the information about, hey, here's who I am, here's some information about me. And I put together a whole display, and that we used at a safety expo that we do each year. And I showed the information that says, hey, we are all a part of this family. You have a part to play. And it was really trying to change their perspective and their perception of what safety was. And really, I feel like they needed to understand that it's outside. It's not just procedures and policies, but it's really like a lifestyle type of thing, you know?
So when you make a couple different references there, you did make a reference about that you used to be in the ministry, or based on some of the ministry stuff that you've done. Do you ever feel like this is more like you being a safety evangelist when it's all said and done?
It's crazy because I know that I'm in a industrial capacity, but I can't escape my ministry evangelistic type of calling I feel that I have on my life. So I always tell, and I share with people on my Facebook page, that my mission is saving souls and saving lives, you know. And so
all at the same time.
Yes, exactly. So that's absolutely where my care for the people comes from, for the most part. You know, understanding people have different, almost everything happening in their lives. We can be in the same room hearing the same story, but getting two totally different perceptions of what is being said. You know, it's like we're in the same world, but all in different worlds. And understanding that we are all in these different worlds puts you in a place where you have to be a little bit more lenient, a little bit less to move and react. You're more of a observant type of, hey, okay, this is what happened. Safety really goes into that. You know, what's the root cause? You know, they talk about it's kind of like inspecting people, you know, but it's from a life perspective, not necessarily a accident or incident perspective. But it's like, hey, why did this person just cut me off in the street? Is there an emergency happening in his car? Did he have to get somewhere? Or is he just angry because he just got out of an argument? Or maybe he was just fired. So my response has to be in perspective to what may be. And I can't assume anything, you know? And so, yes, that the whole thing is about, you know, caring for people, creating that relationship. And ultimately, I feel like that builds to the engagement, and that affects the engagement. And we all know that engagement is the main thing that drives the results, the metrics that people look for. You know, the more engaged people are, the higher the safety, the better the safety, the better the productivity.
So let me ask you a strange question there in regards of when you're taking a look at these different aspects of safety. Do you feel that it's actually kind of the same approach with different style of religions? And when I say that, and I'm talking about the people have different belief systems, depending on who your target audience is at the time, where you might go in and some people might believe in behavior-based safety. They might believe in lean, and they have like these different aspects. So if you do you see a similarity there?
Yes. Yes.
You kind of hesitated at that. So it's kind of like yes and no, or how do you feel?
I feel like there are principles that apply regardless of the faith or regardless of what you believe. There are certain things that are true across the board. You know, they say truth is always the same. Priorities and things like that, facts change, you know, but certain things are just true. Like you plant a seed, you're going to get a whatever seed you planted. Of course, you got to do all the cultivating of it, but you're not going to plant an orange and get an apple. There are just certain principles I feel that exist regardless of what you believe. And one of those things that I feel like regardless of what you believe is that people matter. People are important, and we have to be willing to care for people with the understanding that we don't understand people all the time. So all of those things are excellent. And for me, just the whole safety man movement, it's not a necessarily a system that you implement, but it's more of a way of thinking and approaching a mindset when actually interacting with anything that you're already doing.
Okay, so before we get into that of the safety man movement, I have a question then. So what is the basis of your foundation of safety? If you have to say that it's based around a certain system, that there has to be some strength behind it. And I know a lot of people like to give the answer of, well, I believe in a little bit of everything, and that's perfectly fine to say, but there has to be something that's kind of like the fundamentals that the thing was built off of. So what would you say would be the fundamentals where it started?
I don't know if it's going to answer your question, but I saw a great speaker. You may have heard of him. I'm pretty sure you have. Charlie Moorcraft. And he came and I heard his story. And those stories are always impactful. And when I heard him, I was like, how can I impact people without getting hurt? How can I develop this passion and concern for my well-being without having to deal with a tragic injury to be able to relay that information? And the fact that I'm able to walk out of that room without that story was motivation to be able to tell people, hey, you can get it now before it gets you. I didn't want what I always remember is his inability to interact with his kids when they were at the water park. And I was like, man, you know, I love my kids. So, and I love to play. I'm a very playful person. And when they come home, are they just ready to jump on me and start playing? And that was kind of a trigger where it's like, man, I was already part, you know, being part of the safety task team, and the whole company has goals. Hey, safety first. We bring in accidents down. Everybody says zero and things like that. We don't want anything, but how do we get people to actually respond to that type of thing? And they have to care about something. And I was like, man, I really care about my family, and I do not want to have to experience these tragedies to have this passion or to have this respect for the fact that anything could happen to me at any moment and change my life. So I got to do what I can do to make sure that I make it back to my families. And so that kind of pushed the whole idea of how can I make people care? And it was like, oh, well, you have something to live for. You have something that you are connected to, something that you like, something that you are passionate about.
And we'll be back right after this on Safety FM.
Enjoy the best safety shows on the planet on safetyfm.com.
It is no secret that most successful organizations and professionals are data-driven. As the volume of data that businesses have access to increases, They need more efficient ways to turn the data into actionable insight. Fortunately, iDashboard offers a comprehensive business intelligence solutions to help you with data aggregation, preparation, analysis, visualization, and reporting. With the iDashboard's Data Hub, you can blend data from multiple sources to get a comprehensive view of related data. Then the intuitive dashboard builder gives anyone the freedom to create and design dashboards, and no programming experience is required. It's no wonder why companies like Lockheed Martin, Michigan Humane Society, and Navy Federal Credit Union trust iDashboards to provide them with the data they need to make the most informed decision for their business. Be sure to visit iDashboards.com/safety to learn more. That's iDashboard.com/safety. Make sure that you tell them that Jay Allen sent you.
Jay Allen on Safety FM.
And we're back with more here on Safety FM.
Well, I mean, and I, don't get me wrong, Charles Moorcraft's story is a very important story. But I also think that it actually has what I call an emotional response for outside of him. So when you hear the story the first time, people really focus on it and they go, okay, what can we do to make it correct inside of our organization? And then you use the term while you're giving the description of safety first. And I, you know, nobody's ever going to say safety last. I mean, let's just be realistic. But what does really safety first mean? Because does it mean if we stop making money, we're going to continue to focus on safety? I don't think that it will. I mean, and I think that it's a great term for people to use, but I don't think that it brings a lot of value to an organization in regards of actually saying it. Now, that's my opinion, because the thing is, if we start looking at safety as a value and not something where we're saying, hey, it's a priority, there's a different shift. Right. And the reason that I say that is because I had a conversation with Scott Giller many, many moons ago, and he goes, when you wake up every morning, regardless of you actually being late, you're going to take time to put on your clothes because that is a value to you. If it was a priority, you might skip out on doing that. So when people say safety first, I kind of struggle a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it's not that I want to sit around and go, oh, words are so important in regards to how they're said. But I look at it and I go, how do you do the shift? And then I know that we were having the conversation of what was the basis of what you do and how you started the safety man movement. So when you, I know you talked about the VPPA portion or the VPP portion. So as you look at it, do you feel that it was lean heavy or do you feel that it was more like behavior-based safety, or how do you look at it?
For me personally?
Yeah, for you personally.
I'm not a safety professional. And I don't know in our organization, we, or at least in my location, that we are heavy, lean, promoting. So I'm not like super informed on lean, but behavioral based, we understand that it is people's behaviors that attribute to a lot of things that go on. But we are with that. I think behavior based is a higher thing on my radar, I guess, where it would be, why do we behave the way that we behave? What is happening? And that, I guess that goes back to how I respond to that person who drives crazy on the interstate or whatever. It's like, what is driving those behaviors? And I think it is something that is really getting more and more attention, especially now in September, with it being a awareness month. For mental illness, you know, those things absolutely affect how you behave, you know, whatever you're dealing with on that type of scale. So if I had to favor towards something, I think it would be behavior. Within my location, our engagement is based on, okay, you see a problem. Are you able to fix the problem? Are you willing to fix that problem? Are you just going to go to somebody else about that problem? Like, what are you personally doing? How do you take ownership outside of everything that everybody else says and everybody say you should do? What is your personal commitment and ownership and responsibility in whatever you are coming across? If you see like the metal tag that the guy saw on the ground, okay, you know, it's a problem, but what is your level of commitment or ownership? Are you just trying to give me a hard time, or do you really care about the people around you? And if so, why wouldn't you pick it up?
Well, I mean, those are interesting questions that you propose to people. And I mean, and I know that you're referencing that you're not a safety professional, but I think you're kind of cutting yourself short at the same time, too, as you say that. But I always look at it that when you sign to go into some organizations, is there's kind of some weird things that occur. And I'm talking about across the board, not pinpointing your organization or anything to that extent. But here's how I kind of see how things have been done in the past. You go into an organization, you have somebody who's training you, and they go, this is how I'm supposed to train you, but this is how we really do it. And I call that the black line, blue line. You have somebody kind of sit there for a period of time and they write down a script and say, this is what we're supposed to do. And the blue line is actually how the workers are doing the work. Mm-hmm. Now, I will tell you that I have stolen that from some different concepts that I've seen. And then I look at it and I go, there's so many different principles that you can apply to how safety works, just depending on, you know, what the mentality is. So the ones that I always kind of take a look at, and I always try to have conversations with people to see where they're at, as I go, what if you took a look at these five principles and how would you feel about it? What if I told you that the first one would be based that error is normal, and that your best employee is probably the employee that actually has the most issues, but knows how to cover it better? And I mean that in a very good way, because they're a little bit more resilient. They've done it more frequently. Also, the blame fixes nothing. I mean, we kind of always get that emotional shift of, hey, if I point this out and say, hey, you're to blame for this occurring, well, we get it out of our system, but it doesn't correct anything inside of your location. The other thing is that your system drives the behavior. So depending on what's going on inside of the system, that's how people are going to react, especially depending on how the management or leadership staff is working there. Then the other portion is that based on those things that are occurring, it's vital how we learn from there. I think it's so important that we tend to forget on how important learning is in regards to what's going on, and how we respond as leadership inside of an organization is a crucial factor if anybody's going to share anything with you. And I look at those five principles and I go, hey, that's a mentality and a philosophy. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's definitely not a program. I can't tell you, hey, this is a root cause. But I think that people will be a little bit more open to you in regards of having those conversations. So that's why I always, when I look at a new system or something that's coming up, mm-hmm. I kind of challenge it with those five items. And believe me, by no means am I saying what you're doing is incorrect. I'm very intrigued by it. I mean, the videos that you have on your website are pretty interesting. But I look at it and I go, what is the basis of it? Because I always kind of find it interesting on where you can build from. Mm-hmm. And I always look that this is always evolving. It's not one of those things that safety stagnant. I think the safety was a little bit stagnant for a period of time, but we kind of learned so much from the people that were there before that it's ever changing if you allow it to be. And I just get very hung up on the safety first concept, as you can see, as I've ranted for the last 3 minutes.
I mean, I feel you. I totally understand, because me personally, when I hear safety first, again, I feel like it's a truth to a degree, you know, where it's like, anything that we do, it is intending to be secure and have peace of mind. Even if it's from financial security, it's still a safety net of sorts, where everything that you do, even from your vacations that you go on, if you're going to go there, you only go there because you feel like it is a place where you can actually be, and or somewhere you feel comfortable at. You know, whenever you're in a relationship, is, hey, do I feel safe with this person? And so in my mind, when I'm thinking of safety first, I'm like, hey, this is a 360 all-encompassing concept, where it's beyond just the workplace. But how can we make people understand and get it out of this mindset of policy, procedure, 8 hours a day type of thing, but understanding that what I do impacts other people? And am I taking into consideration all of those things when I perform whatever activity I decide to perform, when I decide not to put on my seatbelt? Who is that affecting? It's like the ripple effect or the butterfly effect or whatever you want to call it. Everything kind of contributes. And I feel like within the activities that we do, at least I guess an American lifestyle is based on safety. It's like in the fabric of everything that we do, and it is so much, and we have so much that we, you know, sometimes take it for granted. Like in America, if you hear a plane flying overhead, you just expect it's an airport, or you live by a naval base. But if you are in another country, they're afraid there's bombs coming to follow, you know. And so our environments and the things that we are just involved with in life in general, I feel like safety has a leg in it all. So not safety first as a first step into zero accidents type of thing for me, but a thought that we need to definitely recognize is relevant in our everyday life.
Now, as you're inside of the space now more and more frequently, because it sounds like being, as you're saying, that you've been doing this since 2012, so we're talking about 7 years in, are you seeing the shift? Are you seeing where people are in companies and organizations are putting a priority on the safety of people inside of the org?
Yes, I see pockets of excellence where there are some people who are excelling. And it goes back to what you're saying, where is that it depends on that leadership. Like your actions speak so much louder than your words do. Where are you telling me do this, do that, and other? However, are you, if safety is first, like we're talking about with that, if safety is first, are you willing to lose money for it? Are you willing to, you know, because you're gonna lose money one way or the other. You're gonna either, I won't say lose money, but it's gonna cost one way or the other. It's gonna cost you to actually invest in making sure that the environment is better, or it's going to cost you for not doing it later on when you're paying out workman's comp and different things like that. There is a cost to it no matter what. But I have seen changes, but those areas that are changing are in the areas where the leadership hold people accountable to, hey, this is what we say we're going to do. Why are you not doing that? Or who is responsible for us, not necessarily even who is responsible, but why are we not doing what we all know we're supposed to do? Here's what we're trying to accomplish. And in my area, this is a pretty intense environment building aircraft carriers, but we've been, and this year, we haven't had an accident this year in my location, but again, that's amongst 20,000 employees, and we may be a pocket of 100 or two or something like that. But there's so many different leaders within that large number, and so many different messages being conveyed through the actions that, I mean, I've been able to go and talk to people and talk to different groups and different organizations. But if I come to a group and I say, hey, guys, hey, this is what I'm talking about. Hey, safety man movement, blah, 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 blah. But then they don't get support to do what the goal is, or you're not giving, you're not following up with this. My presentation isn't the answer. It is just, the message isn't the answer. It's just something to support what you have to already be sold on doing. So we have some areas that are doing fantastic, but then there are some areas that still suffering, but still have the same rules until it comes down to that small pocket of who that specific leadership is, or and who's holding that leader accountable and who's holding that leader accountable. I feel like there's always a pressure point. So you have the president at the top who says, hey, we're totally sold in this company on safety. But then it comes down, it goes down to the next level, then the next level down. And at some point, there's a level of pressure where somebody has to do either make a decision to be safe or meet the goals of this cost schedule type of thing. And that pressure point makes a compromise. But it never gets communicated up to the top that, hey, this is a pressure point. It just reflects on everyone who follows that. Everyone downstream of that gets affected, because now we're not doing what we're supposed to do, but it was never communicated up. So then the president is still like, man, why are we doing accidents? I'm sold on safety. They say it comes from the top and goes down, but we never recognize where is that point where somebody is being forced to compromise the well-being of the people or safety for something else that is getting in the way. So there's places.
Well, I think I can answer that for you, because I almost feel that that's where the placement of the middle management. Mm-hmm. They're between the C-suite and the employee, or the C-suite and the field level people, and they have to make a determination on what's going to be the priority, if it's production or if it's actual safety. Right. I think that the middle management is almost the person that you're talking about there.
Yeah, and it seems like there's a suffering if they don't go to one way or the other, where, I don't know, it's like they have to be willing to, they or either they're put in a position where they feel like they have to either be willing to sacrifice my bonus, sacrifice my whatever, my numbers or whatever, to accomplish these impossible getting blood from a turnip type of expectations. And there has to be a conversation there. There has to be not just conversation, but there has to be some type of recognition and action to take in place to relieve those pressure points, and for companies to get a reality check of where they are. We say we want to be full safety, this, that, and the other, but in reality, you can't do what you say you're going to do and do it safely within that time frame. And so I feel like that's where a compromise comes in. Say, hey, I can do this job for $1,000, but you can't. There's no way for you to do it for $1,000 safely, but you're not going to change that price and say, you know, I'm going to lose this contract because I want to keep the people safe. Because again, it's business and relationship, but oftentimes that business gets the upper hand over the relationship with the people and the caring for the people.
No, absolutely. Now, Terry, I did notice that you recently were at the VPPA conference, and that was open to the public in regards of you being able to do your speech. Now, do you have anything coming up in the near future where the audience might be able to come and see you?
Yes. At the end of this month, I will actually be at the Carolina Star Safety Conference in Greensboro, North Carolina, which is through the 25th through the 27th at the, I guess it's the Four Seasons. I don't remember the real name of the conference center. Maybe I can pull it up. But yeah, that'll look up Carolina Star Safety. You can Google that, and it should tell you more information about that location. Or you can go on my website. I also got a link up there.
Okay, and what is your website? Or let me kind of go back this way. If people want to know more information about you, where would they need to go?
www.terrygrayspeaks.com. Or if you're on Facebook, just go to facebook.com/terrygrayspeaks. Or even on Instagram as well, Terry Gray Speaks. Communicate through those avenues. Connect with me anyways. I have a chat on my actual website sometimes, that if you chat, I can respond right back to you when I'm available. Or just send me an email to safetyman@terrygrayspeaks.com, and I'll get back to you as soon as I can.
Well, Terry, I appreciate you coming on to Safety FM.
I appreciate you having me. I hope I answered all your questions like you wanted me to.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.
Safety FM.
Safety.
So do you feel like you're missing out on what everyone is starting to do now, that live streaming thing, and you don't know where to start or what to do? I have the resource and the information to provide to you in regards on how you can stream onto 40 social media platforms all at one time. Yes, that's 440 social media platforms all at one time. All you'll need to do is go to safetyfm.com/one. That's safetyfm.com/one. That's O-N-E. So just in case, and you'll be able to start live streaming just like you're hearing people starting to do right now, up to 40 social media platforms.